Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Yeah, come closer, don't worry. You know, we say we're vegetarians. Like that. We don't. We eat every fifth person, and the fifth person just came by. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Gotta scan my audience here. Okay, Bhagavad Gita, it's right here. Yeah. So I mentioned before, there's a thing called the Catalogus Catalogorum. How many people know about this? I mentioned it before, yeah. It's a bibliography maintained by Indologists, people who study India, Indian culture. And it's a list of all known ancient Sanskrit texts. Just like Greek and Latin are classical languages, or Persian, classical languages. Or I guess Chinese, yeah, I'm not sure what it is. What is Chinese? Is it one classical language? No, it's many. I guess anything over 100 years qualifies as a classical language. Right? So this is the original Devanagari, or the original Sanskrit text, like that. And so when it was last published, the Catalogus Catalogorum included over 160,000 ancient Sanskrit texts known. For example, a treatise on mathematics in the Maharaj of Mysore's library, a treatise on architecture in the London Museum. So it says where they all are, what the content, gives a little content description, like that, you know. And again, these include mathematics, astronomy, architecture, medical sciences, social sciences, music, everything like that, you know. And very sophisticated, you know, the Western, you know, scholars, they say some of these mathematical systems would take a Western an entire lifetime just to master one of them, like that. For example, you were telling me about granite?
Yes.
Arithmetic. There's five systems?
Yeah, there are about 29 systems of doing calculations.
Yeah.
And we are using the whole world right now, Gomutra Vidhi.
Yeah.
Out of 29, there are 28 other methods.
Yeah. So we learn arithmetic, how to do it, like you make a little box and 25 into 673, you do your thing, right? To calculate the division, long division. You learn that? You know, right? Okay, everybody here can do long division by hand without a calculator? So these are thousands of years ago, hundreds of years ago. Like he's explaining, there's 29 different ways of doing this, right? So we have one of those. We use one of those. You know? Now, some of them, for example, are mental. As I remember, if you can keep three-digit registers in your mind, 212, 113, 204. Okay. Yeah. You see how dull-headed we are in terms of this, like that. You know. But everybody here, even Kama Gayatri, you know, if she had a little baby calf. And she picks it up the first day, and she's feeding it, you know. After, you know, even when it gets bigger, you know, she big muscles there, like, you know. Yeah. But that's it. Every day you develop, you know, same way. If you use your brain, use your memory, then after some time you just start developing it, just like a muscle, same way. And there are techniques, too, for memorizing things like that, you know. So we don't learn these, you know. The role of, you know, one is to be dependent upon machines, okay. So if you can do this, so if you can keep three-digit numbers registered in your mind, you can multiply together six-digit numbers, you know, 227,333 by 414,206, 1,270,000, like that, you know, and they compete with calculators and they win, you know, because people put the numbers in when they're enter them wrong, like that, have to go back again. Otherwise, it's like just about a dead heat, you know. The people can, they can just do this, it's good, so this is all produced by savages, right? This is the British propaganda that all these people in India were just savages and we have to civilize them, you know. One good bookcase of English literature is worth more than all the entire literature of the Hindus, like that, you know, like that. Rudyard Kipling, something like that. Aristotle, you know, yeah. So there's arrogance, you know. But it's not that way. You're actually beginning to discover there's, you know, intense things on mathematics, there's intense things on architecture, and then all these things, political science, you know. Yeah. And they have a hierarchy too. What's the most important thing for us? Physical sciences. What's the most important thing for them? Theology, sociology, and the physical sciences. Okay, you've got to take care of that. Yeah. D.N. Shukla, in his classical text on Vastu Shastra, architecture, he says that, you know, they knew how to do all these things. They had hydrogen ion jets. They would hydrogenize ion and get jets like that. What would they use it for? They make a little, maybe a thing about as big as this room, maybe 8 jets, and it would go up in the air with the king and the queen and all the princesses, all the concubines, or other queens. It would go up like that with banners on it and spin around the air a little bit, then come back down again. All the citizens would go, ooh, like that, you know. And the king would do it a couple times, you know. And he would go off to judge some the biggest pumpkin contest and, you know, best you know, sari contest, like that. And all the citizens would, after that, the citizens would do it like that, like the Ferris wheel. You know, the Ferris wheel was designed for a World's Fair, like that, Eiffel Tower. So they used them like, they considered it toys, you know. All these things can be accomplished by plants. You don't have to manufacture these drugs, right? Where does penicillin come from? Yeah, it's naturally growing from cheese mold, you know? But then after that, you isolate the entire, you know, thousands of people working, you isolate the chemistry, you discover a whole way to manufacture it in a big chemical laboratory, penicillin, you know? The guy goes, oh yeah, I have some myself too. Scrape it off the cheese like that. You know? There's a plant in Mexico. It's called the seamstress, the tailor's plant. And it's a bayonet cactus. You get these cactuses that with the leaves that go out like this, with the points on them. So this one, you cut a hole in the center, and this kind of liquor comes in called pulque. And you drink it, it's very mild, nothing happens, not alcoholic. But when it hits the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, it turns into alcohol. So, and then you break off the needle at the top and pull it, and the fiber comes off all the way like that, you know? So you're sitting there, you know, sewing, you know, like that, being a little kid. Yeah. So it's like natural thing for, like, you know, Shudra guys, you know. Not heavy, it's a mild intoxication. It's in between, like, wine and beer, I think, something like that, maybe like 8% alcohol. So you drink the stuff and stay a little bit intoxicated, talking with your friends, and just, you know, sewing up bags all day long at that, go home, you know. So it's just, everything is there. You know Haldane? He was like a big chemist, very famous chemist in the history of chemistry. And he said, I would never manufacture any chemistry that some bacteria could do for me. Never manufacture any chemical that some bacteria, damn bacteria, could do for me. So that's our whole point. And you start discovering there's a lot of damn bacteria in nature. Yeah? But I'm saying, if you know what you're doing, everything is there in nature. So many groups like permaculture, ecology groups, now they're discovering this. You just know how to deal with nature properly, then it produces everything in abundance like that. You can have three levels, right? Three levels of roots below the surface. Right below the surface, one kind of root, something grows a little deeper, something grows a little deeper. Above that, you have strawberries, kumquats, and plums, right? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You get six things growing all in the same land like that. And you can pick them so that they're sympathetic. They actually help each other. You know, at some point the weeds are growing, but no, the existing drops its leaves at a certain time, which protects it so the weeds don't grow. You know? So you get this whole, you know, family of six guys together. In Peru, in the jungle, they have an intense pharmacology. The indigenous medical system is still totally functional. You see right side by side, you know, in modern medicine, what's it called? Allopathy and curandaro. They're both making just as much money. They both got Mercedes Benz. Like that. Yeah. But if I get a broken arm, yeah, I go see the allopathic guy, you know. But if I got like some systemic thing, I go see the other guy. And they take the pulse, same as like Ayurveda. Yeah. And so it seems they've lost their contact with these scriptural sources, which in India are still there. Yeah. But they have a much better pharmacology. And they have thousands of this saying, which I've heard from many pretty qualified sources, that they did some research in the Amazon, and these trees are like, you know, 40, 50 feet tall. You know, it's like maybe 5, 6 stories. Like the redwoods in California are 50 stories tall. 50 stories tall. The biggest building in San Francisco is 50 stories. The Transmanon, this redwood tree is like, you know, How do you get your water? So 50 stories tall. So in the Amazon too, they have these gigantic trees and they're spreading. So they did an analysis, and there was more varieties of insects in that one tree than you find in all of Europe at the present time. Yeah, many things. Oh my gosh, you see ecstasy. It's okay. Yeah. Whose baby is it? Oh yeah, my disciples in Santa Cruz, California. The baby has to be in the air and moving most of the time, and then she's like quiet. You know? It's like, you know. And then was it your baby? Whose baby was it? Somebody else. That was Shinibas. This water, you know, her bath time is her greatest experience, splashing. And then they found this thing in Chicago. The water was flowing like about this deep. It was like a fountain area, and kids were playing, and that was it. She was just running back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And after 1 hour, they couldn't drag her out of there. Yeah, it's like it was World War III to get her to leave that place. Yeah. So we have different natures, you know, from previous karma, from previous lifetimes, what they need. So all these different scriptures and stuff like that, you know. So we're trying to like investigate these because these are actually UNICEF has actually even declared, right, Sanskrit. Pronunciation as a heritage. You know, oh, I'm hurrying, you know, they actually it's officially declared like an official patrimony, that's a Spanish word, inheritance of society. And so therefore it gets like special preference in terms of printing things, in terms of getting grants for educational institutions that support it and like that. I got the article from Peru about maybe a year ago, so it may have been that recently. But UNICEF declared like this Sanskrit translation is like something, speaking the Vedas like that is like a, you know, so on. So much knowledge. So what basic Bhagavad Gita is coming down, this is our central text, and many, many, many people say, you know, the Bible of India. A little different, but yeah, it holds the same place as the Quran amongst, you know, most Hindus, the Bible amongst most Christians. And the Bhagavad Gita is very central. The other groups, like for example, Jews don't accept the New Testament. Yeah? And so certain groups of Hindus don't accept the Bhagavad Gita and stuff. But Prabhupada says every Indian, devotees were traveling in India preaching, 1967, like that, 68. And Prabhupada says, devotees said, well, sometimes Prabhupada, Indians don't accept what we're saying, like that we're preaching and talking about, you know, how things are. And they say, no, we don't accept that. You know? So what should we do? And Prabhupada said, in India, you must preach on the basis of Bhagavad Gita. Like that. And one devotee says, well, what if an Indian doesn't accept Bhagavad Gita? And Prabhupada says, then he goes to hell. Because even a Muslim, right? If you're quoting from the Gita and stuff like that, a Muslim will accept, okay. Some of the Muslims quoting from the Quran. And we say, okay, a pious book, good book, spiritual book. Listen. Nice. You know? So all over India. And of course, we're specifically accepting it. It's coming down. Ah, there they are. Buenos dias. Bienvenidos. Yeah. There's a, outside in the hallway, there's some nice cushions there. Yeah. So we're accepting this is actually coming down from Krishna 5,000 years ago. So many things. Everybody here, your heart's going in cycles. I know that. I'm a great mystic. I know. Love dub. I forgot what it is in French. In French, it's not love dub. It's like fuchsia. Yeah. So anyway, in America we go lum dub. Okay. Then yeah, your lungs are going in cycles, right? I know that too. Yeah. Then your stomach's going in cycles. The day, you know, day is going in cycles. The years are going in cycles. Well, the Vedas say the whole universe is going in cycles. Okay. Sounds like okay. That's a working hypothesis. You know. And these are called one description is age of gold, age of silver, age of bronze, age of iron. Age of gold, like that. Think of heart. You know? And so during the age of gold, everything is very fine. How long do people live in the age of gold? Yeah, it's very fine. It's like in the springtime, it's just like, you know, flowers are coming out and, you know, animals are appearing and eggs are cracking open and everybody's singing and it's just, you know, houses are opening the windows up and you're cleaning and it's just, wow, everything is alive. You know, that, you know? And you haven't got to plant anything. There's this abundance of everything you need, just growing wild like that. You know? In the second age, right? Age of silver, live how long? Yeah, and now you have to plant, but it gives back so much more than you planted like that. In the age of bronze, 1,000 years. And now you get back what you planted. Okay. Now, in the Bible, it's talking about Methuselah. How old did Methuselah live? Any Christians here? Anybody baptized as a Christian here? You were, I know, because you're Catholic. Yeah? Yeah? Yeah. So I probably reinitiated you. You've been reinitiated. Yeah. Yeah. Methuselah. You know how old Methuselah was? About 1,000 years. 1,000 years. And it says in the same paragraph, it talks about Ahab and Moab and 1,200, 1,400, 1,300. And he got married when he was 900 years old and had children when he was like, you know. But this is exactly the same description in the Vedas, in the previous age. Then it says that God said, okay, enough of this, and fix the age at 100 years or something like that, you know. So in the age of Kali, the Iron Age, people are supposed to live 100 years. Actually, in the Ayurveda, it says if you don't live 100 years, you're sinful, like that. Yeah, we're all engaged in this horrible activities. Yeah. So 100 years, and then you get back less than you plant. If you put out 100 seeds, you get back 40 trees like that. Yeah, so on. So this is the different ages, shrinking. So in the last age, in the age of bronze, when Krishna appeared, it was like fall. If you go to New York in the fall, you still see some flowers, some fruits like that, some things like that, but not as much, and things are closing down like that. But when the Kali Yuga comes, the age of iron, winter, if you go to New York in the winter time in December, you don't see squirrels, you don't see dogs, you don't see people. They're completely covered like, there's bundles of, in the weather, you don't see the sun, you don't see the sidewalk, it's covered with ice, everything else. It's just like intense, and going from one place to another is like a, it's a battle. Living in New York is like, that's why New Yorkers are a certain way. It's just, wow. And to live in New York, you've got to be, a survivor. Any place else in the world, you're like, easy, So that's, so somebody comes there and he sees all this, and you say, oh, you come back and sometime you'll see squirrels and dogs and people throwing frisbees and singing and everything else. And days are longer. He says, no, it's all mythology. It's always like this. No, it's not. No. So this is our point, is that it's not always like this. Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. It was finer atmosphere like that. Now maybe we have to start looking at trees, 5,000-year-old trees. I don't know many exist that old. Maybe some petrified things. And then you see, okay, where the, the rings? Larger and stuff like that. So usually what happens is science, when it investigates these things, it actually supports the ideas that are coming down. Yeah, that's the way it was. Yeah. And if it's not, then we see, we're misinterpreting it. The science helps us to actually interpret these things the way it was. So many wonderful things in terms of medicine and everything else. So the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all of this. Because again, you can have, I made this joke yesterday, Mataji has a health food store, right? Okay, you give classes too? Any classes on nutrition and exercise? Or?
Not right now.
Okay. But we're talking about Herman. There's a cartoon series called Herman. You ever seen that? He's kind of an irascible old guy like that. His comments, So Herman's in the supermarket with his wife, and they're picking things off the shelf. And Herman says, I don't trust natural. People die of natural causes every day. But we can live a lot longer if we eat properly. Yeah. So that's our point. Best use of a bad bargain. We're all going to die. But it's better to die at 115 years than it is at 35 years old, Which is what it says in the future, it'll be like that. It'll get more and more difficult until a ripe old man will be 35 years old. And somebody who can remember his own name will be like a scholar. The whole Mahamantra, down to the level of like gorillas, a chimpanzee is about the same as a four-year-old child. You deal with four-year-old kids, right? You deal with four-year-old kids, right? How old is Hal? Five. Okay, so Hal's a little bit more intelligent than a chimpanzee. Not much. Yeah, and so they can't talk because they haven't got any nerves in their mouth. And they have, they have fingers though, yeah. So they can use sign language, you know. Could translate this now. Okay. Yeah. What is this? Indian. Yeah, like lady has a dot there. Now you can talk to, you can translate for chimpanzees. You go to India now, you can translate to deaf people. You know? Yeah. So, but they haven't got any, so they can learn. You can teach them. They can talk like that. They can say, oh, I'm sorry I nipped you, you know, I bit you this morning. Yeah. I'm sorry I bit you this morning, like that. I was feeling bad. Please forgive me, like that. Yeah, they remember emotional states. They remember, they feel guilty about things that are right and wrong, you know, like that. So, and they can teach others. They start teaching. They put bananas, little chimpanzee, growing up, and Washer, I think she was adult, and she knew how to do it. So they would hide bananas in his cage, and she started teaching him sign language to communicate to him where to find the bananas, like that. So they were passing it off from generation to generation. You know? So by the end of the Kali Yuga, we'll all be like that, you know, like that, giving classes. Yeah. So 5,000 years ago, when it was spoken, it was finer atmosphere, everything else. And then it's coming down like that, gradually. And the disciplic succession is here, listed in the front like that. You know? And so many things, art, architecture, all these things. But what's the value? Okay, you can live for a long time, but you're going to die still, right? You know? So in the health food story, you've got to kind of slowly introduce that idea. I'm giving you a way to have more time to solve the fundamental problem. It may take you some time to solve the existential problem. And that is that we're all going to die. Again, Albert Camus got his Nobel Prize just for writing stories on that one basis like that. The Stranger, the Myth of Sisyphus, the whole thing was, what's it all worth if we're going to die? You know, all these big things and stuff. Well, so what? We're all going to die. Well, I guess you're right there. That's the first problem, right? And so that, yeah, that is, become immortal. When is it possible? No, it's not possible. Well, oh yeah, we're going to be making immortal. How is science going to make us immortal? What are some of the ways that science is like, you know, making us, you know, telling us in the future will make you immortal? What's her suggestions?
Replacement parts.
Huh? Replacement parts. They're already doing that. Yeah. Yeah.
Preserving the neural networks of the brain and then re-implanting them in a fresh body.
Yeah. Cybergenics. Yeah. Super friendly. Supposedly Walt Disney's brain is stored someplace. Yeah, like that. The most famous one is that we're going to scan your brain and transfer your personality to a computer like that. Yeah, that's the other one. That's a real famous one like that. You know? But they say, yeah, because everybody probably says, if there is no immortality, then why everybody is like so anxious about it? Because we see, yeah, this is the way. He says, you put your finger even on an ant. Put your finger on an ant, and he'll struggle to live. Because everybody has this feeling that we're meant to live like that. Right? You get into the fundamental idea, it's very clear. We're immortal. You know, we're not meant for death. You know? So the suggestion of Bhagavad Gita, there are ideas in the Vedas about, you know, what we call leapers, leaving your dead body and going into a new body and chasing the owner out and taking control of their body and like that. There are ideas like that. It's a whole subtle technology about how all these things work. In 26 ways of arithmetic, we got one. There's also 26 ways of, you know, jumping from body to body and all this kind of stuff. But it requires a different character, technology. So here is the most it's describing. In the beginning, what's the situation? Arjuna is faced with a situation of death, everything else like that. Yeah? The story is that there's just two rival families, not rival, there's two branches of one family. And one family is just full of just, you know, just what's the word, like attachment. There's a word for it. What's Dhritarashtra? What's his problem? You know, he's born blind. He's powerful, intelligent, everything else, but he's born blind. So he feels so cheated by destiny that he was supposed to become the king. He's the oldest son. He feels just cheated by destiny, you know. So he says, okay, if I can't do it, my sons, they should become the kings. And my brother's sons, oh, he didn't have any sons. He was cursed. He went off to the forest like that. But then his wife got this mantra by which she could call different demigods. And so she then got five sons, you know, born from the different devatas, the gods. So anyway, he died. And then she went back to the kingdom. And there's Dhritarashtra, older brother, with, you know, his wife is pregnant, something like that, and she's pregnant, whatever, you know. So she shows up with these five sons who are the sons of the previous king. She knows they're not going to be popular. She's telling her, she's a queen, you know, because this automatically then they're going to be, they have the right to become the princes like that. So it's a soap opera beyond belief, you know. You know, young stallions, right? As the world turns, or all my sons. There's always soap operas. I guess they still go on in the afternoon. Are they still there in the afternoon? These like serial stories. You know, I know when I was a child, every day like 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, we'd always stories about, you know, the young so and so, right? One big one, as the world turns, like that. Nobody watches these. Okay. In the afternoon, they have them like that. And it's, you know, it's always like one very evil woman, but she's like, you know, she's very rich and like, you know, and she's, you know, always, you know, like that. And there's one fool. It's like everybody, you know, they kind of put them together and like, you know, watch what happens like that. And it finishes off with this cliffhanger. What will happen to Elizabeth tomorrow? You know, like that. Bob discovers that Elizabeth's baby is not his brother's sister's uncle's baby. And actually, wait, stay tuned tomorrow, right? Telenovelas. Telenovelas, right? In Espanol. Telenovelas, right? Soap operas in English, like that. You know? So this is the best one. It's the most intense, and finally comes down to this position that the Pandavas, the righteous guys, have been trying to avoid fighting for so long. Everything they can do to try to avoid this conflict. This, look, give us half the kingdom. You take half, we'll take half. It's ours. We deserve this. It's our right. And we're actually more qualified than you. But forget it. You take half the kingdom. So no. And they cheat them out of this and that. And finally they come back from being cheated after 14 years of doing these things. So okay, we want I want the kingdom back. We'll give you half. No. Okay, look. To avoid fighting in the family, there's five of us. Give us five villages. That's it. I don't know, it's like five. It's Boise. How do we got five towns? Because we're warriors. We've got to raid. Got to take protect people. Then Duryodhana says, I wouldn't give you enough land to put under the head of a pin. Like that. So what's going to happen then? There's got to be a fight. Like that, you know? So finally Arjuna and everybody else, you know, Yudhisthira is the most pious man who ever lived. He's an incarnation of the god of righteousness. And he says, okay, you know, our father's dead, therefore we should respect our uncle. And if he's supporting our cousins, we'll just do whatever he says like that. We'll do like that. But they're rascals. You know, he's envious. Doesn't matter. He's our uncle. Like that. So all the rest of the brothers are like, God, this guy's, you know, waiting, you know. So finally the time comes, and everybody's assembled, and all the kings of the world have taken sides, and as they go off someplace in the distance, you know, this is a common people are not going to be disturbed by this. And they have laser-directed anti-tank hellfire rockets and all this, you know. You know, warrior guys, they're all like, oh, wow, you know, a good fight, you know. Today is a good day to die, like that, yeah. Death before dishonor, you know. Kill them all and let God sort them out. Yeah, like that, you know. So not like cowards or anything else. It's good. If you die, you go to heaven. Like that, you go to enjoy with the gods and drink nectar. And if you're Muslim, you marry 50 virgins. One's enough. One's enough problem. Yeah, it's in the Quran. In the Vedas too, the same thing. All these promises of celestial pleasures for ladies too. You know, you live a pious life, and your husband's a demon, a rascal, a devil, and everything else. But if you're chaste, and you go to heaven. You get 50,000 dresses, or like that, 200,000 maidservants, you know, or something, you know, a handsome husband. You marry Clark Gable. But it's all described in the Vedas, in the Quran, even the Bible, Old Testament, and the Vedas, like that, and so on. So Arjuna's, they're waiting. Okay, it's just like, you know, we're going to start at noon or something like that. So Arjuna's waiting. He's like, oh, he's enthusiastic. Wow, finally. So much. You hear the revenge story. It's incredible what they had to go through, what they tolerated like that, you know? Incredible. I can't even describe it, what they tolerated like that. And to also to their, not just them, but to, you know, Draupadi, their princess, their queen like that, you know? Sataksi, you know? We walk outside on the bike. So we're going through Harinam, and some rough guy is drinking. They grab you and start taking your clothes off, right? Would you like that? Yeah. So is there one man here who wouldn't try and protect her? Yeah, you see like that. She says, hey, cut it out. Don't do that. You know, you have you, hey, come on, you know. So, you know, it's just like, that's what happened. You know, someone like Dosatakshi's age, very pious girl, they find it desnude in public in front of all her peer group, like that's in high school. These things happen, right? In high school, these things happen like that and then stuff. And after that, it's like, phew, unbelievable. You know? 5 years later, some guy gets a gun and kills like half the people in the high school at that. Yeah. So that's what happened. It's really intense. So finally, Arjuna, after 14 years, revenge. He's just waiting, okay. 11:30, 11:31, 11:32, just waiting. Oh, at last, yeah. And then his older brother, Bhima, who's the son of the wind god, impetuous, friendly, you know, volatile, he's even more enthusiastic, you know. He promised one of them, before they tried to date Draupadi's clothes off, they were insulting her, and he said, okay, come here, mamacita. Right? In Spanish, it's like honey. Hey, he pulled his dhoti up like that, exposing his thigh. He said, come here, honey. Sit on your new husband's lap like that. Their husband's present like that. So Bhima said, I swear that I'll crush that thigh. If I don't do that, I promise, may I never go to heaven, may I never see my ancestors, may I rot in hell forever if I don't break your thighs like that. Sit down. Because yeah. They were, you know, bound by certain agreements. They couldn't defend her. So finally then Bhima is sitting there looking across at Dushasana or Duryodhana, who did this, you know, across the battlefield, and he's going like, you know. And he's like about, even in the movies, when they play him in the movies, Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been a great Bhima, I guess, something like that. He's about Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was a young man. His biceps were 32 inches when he would like do the work like that, you know. I mean, he's bigger than most of us here. Like, even now he's big. You come in like that, it's like, he's probably, you know, his biceps were as big as your waist, like that, right? He's picking up, he literally could carry you two guys on his waist. Well, he did that one time. You had two guys sitting on his biceps like that, you know. So these guys are like that, you know. So Arjuna's ready. He's ready to do this whole battle and everything else, and righteous revenge. Nothing is sweeter than the blood of my enemy. Oh, you know. And then Krishna says, okay. And so then Arjuna says, okay, now we're ready. Background's there. They see the armies, they're blowing their trumpets. And he says, yeah. They're blowing the conch roll. Yeah, okay. Arjuna said, at that time, the son of Pandu, seated on the chariot bearing the flag of Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared, right? Took the safety off of his rifle, you know, and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Krishna, who became his chariot driver. God became his chauffeur. He said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, he's talking to the blind king now, the father of the evil son of Dhritarashtra. Who is the father of the evil son of Dhritarashtra? Dhritarashtra. Yeah. Who's in Grant's tomb? Grant, yeah. O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, O Arjuna, all the Kurus assembled here. There Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-laws, and well-wishers. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit. I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. My whole body is trembling and my hair is standing on end. My bow Gandiva is slipping from my hands and my skin is burning. I am unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself. My mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune. I do not see how any good can come from killing one's own kinsmen in this battle, nor can I see, oh my dear Krishna, any subsequent victory, happiness, or kingdom. And he goes on like this, and he gives so many reasons, you know, that, yeah, even though they're evil guys, they're horrible, everything else is bad about them, still they're my cousins, like that, you know, and my nephews, like that. And he goes on, even if I kill them, what's going to happen, you know? Afterwards, you say, hey guys, I won. See, look at, you know, you want to call all your family, right? What happens when you graduate from university? You know, you have a wedding, right? You invite all your friends and everything else like that, you know? Even like you stole the guy from some other girl, you got him, your husband. Some other girl was after him and you won. You invite her to the wedding like that. That's the soap opera, right? The evil girl invites, you know, her enemies to the wedding to see the wedding, you know? Yeah, but that, you know, because we want to show our opulence to our family members, that's how you enjoy it, like that. Yeah, and what's the use of driving home with a new car and pulling into the parking lot, pulling into your driveway if you live in the country? But if you live in the city, you know, in the richer area, you pull your new Mercedes in, you get out like that. You know, you know, yeah. That's the whole thing. And enjoyment is actually that somebody else reflects it back. So he's thinking, well, what if I kill everybody and so many of our own soldiers get killed, then what's the use? There's nobody left to show off like that, you know? I won, but what's on this, you know, ocean of corpses, dead bodies? Then he starts thinking, well, what about families, you know? There'll be so many ladies unprotected and everything else, and then guys will start to seduce them, or they'll just look for shelter someplace with somebody, and then they'll start having all these unwanted children, and the whole world will be flooded with, like, you know, the kids that nobody wanted in the first place and nobody's taken care of, and the whole population will become like thieves, rogues, rascals, and the whole world will go to hell. You know? So he gives all these rules and regulations, all these things like that. So we have right here Parasara's Dharma Shastra, like that. And because there are rules and regulations for social conduct, like that. You know? Now, and that's what he's quoting, like that, you know? And okay, so we're gonna open this up here like that, okay? Somewhere, just random here, okay? Yeah. All right, that's good. It's gone. If a woman performs a religious rite without taking her husband's consent, okay, it is of the rakshasas, the trolls, you know, trolls. No, the trolls appropriate the entire religious result, like that. This is what Manu says. If a woman does harm to her kinsmen and friends, or if she causes a miscarriage, abortion, no one should talk to her. What sin is incurred by killing a priest, abortion is twice as great. He gives many atonements for different things, which you can do to become free from the sin. He says, for this, there is no atonement possible. Jai. Okay. Yeah. On the occasion of a birth, a brahmana recovers his purity within 10 days, a warrior within 12, a merchant within 15, and a shudra, an artisan, within 1 month. So many things about different reactions like that. You know, for, you know, eating food from different people, you get a reaction for like that. You know, it's associating with them like that. In the Philippines especially, they know that a lot of magic there, a lot of witchcraft in the Philippines. A lot of it. I've seen it. I've seen it. Yeah, so we pass out prasadam, we cook food, we offer to Krishna, we distribute it. There we came near, they liked the music and dancing, but they would not eat until they knew us very well, like that, what kind of people we were. Because you know by the food and stuff, you can really connect, get control of someone's consciousness like that. Yeah. So many subtle things like that, laws of society, reactions, and so many things like that. In the West, we're a third world country, right? Which is a third world country, India or America? Well, in technology, you know, India used to be the third world country in technology, and America was first world country. But in social philosophy, ethics, and morality, India is the first world country, and America is the fifth world country, right? There's one, what was the word? Spring. Naimisharanya. It's a pilgrimage place since time immemorial. It's actually where the battle occurs. Like that, is? Yeah, Naimisharanya. Nimshar. Oh, okay, Kurukshetra, okay. Same places though. These springs are coming up out of places like that, and they're considered very purified, very integrated with subtle forces like that. So we went to Naimisharanya, and the spring is coming up, and it's about the size of from here to the corner, and the actual place, and they built many temples around it like that. And so on a full moon day, it's supposed to have very, very special potency for relieving you from the reactions to your sinful activities like that. You know, crushing ants when you walk, you know, cheating widows and orphans out of their inheritance. You know, what, you know, so many things. But you can, you know, any person would see, or killing somebody, you know. So, yeah, there's some reaction for this, you know. So, normally it's about, every day maybe like about 40, 50 people take a bath there and visit the temples, and so many ashrams, mostly empty. The police have their feet up in front of a fire with their radio going outside, like, you know, nothing happening. But the day before, 2 days before, all these trains start coming with all these sadhus with big beards and, you know, everything. It's amazing. It's like, you know, and all the places fill up and people come out to sell stuff. Then the actual day of Somatit, of Amavasya, dark moon, no moon, like that. And if it falls on them, about 10,000 people come. 10,000 people come take their bath in this one dark moon day. And if it falls on Monday, Somatit Amavasya, then it's like 100,000 come. You know? So we're Hindus, okay, you know. So I was overnight, about 3-4 days there with maybe 5 disciples and friends. It was very nice, very pleasant, very peaceful. So many people, yogis there. And you walk down the pathways, these guys are walking, you know, 110 years old, big beard, you know. And the guy, he looks at you, you know, like, you know, what does this guy know? You know, like that. Because they're very pure, very developed. And so then we got up early and went to bathe, and we got up early before anybody else. Okay, Hindus, you got to do this, you know. So I went in the water, and I came out, and I couldn't keep smiling. I couldn't keep from smiling. It was like, I was like, you know, in a Rock Talk, our disciple, he came out the same way. It was like, wow, it works. I mean, 100,000 people haven't been doing this for, you know, for 5,000 years because they're idiots, you know. They're so stupid, you know, superstitious. You know, like, oh, we're intelligent, you know. No, it works, you know. And that by the end of the day, the water was black. It was black by the end of the day like that, you know. I don't know what it means like that, but it's like in the beginning, you know, we got in there first like that, you know. And also one girl, she's Nadia Rasapuri. She's, her parents are devotees. She's interesting. Her parents are devotees, but she kind of didn't get into it so much, you know. But she was really, you know. Yeah, you know, she'll bear with us. So she went into with the lady. She came the same way like that. So he's going through so many different scriptures that describe all these atonements and reactions. And Parasara, there's Dharma Shastra, we're describing this, you know. But some are for the Kali Yuga, some are for the Age of Gold. And we're trying to publish this now. We have an institute, North American Institute of Oriental and Classical Studies. And Prabhupada says, this is the one for the Kali Yuga. You know, and it describes very practical things in terms of remarriage, in terms of, you know, dividing up wealth if something happens like that. You know, so many very practical things for this environment. Because in the Satya Yuga, if the husband left his body, you know, the wife would just go in the funeral pyre right after him. Because one friend of ours, his name is actually Paul Dillon, maybe about like not too long ago, maybe 15 years ago. He was traveling in Nepal, like that. And he had one guy, and they were going to all these very rustic places. It was very interesting. And they stayed one night in the village, in a town, small town village, not too big. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, everyone starts moving around the town, all this noise is going on. And my friend asked this guy, what's happening, you know? So he said, let me find out. So he talked to some people. He said, oh, the count has died, like that, the count, you know. And a very nice man, very pious, very, everybody loved him. He was so generous, so kind, so brave, like that. And so they have to burn the body before the sun comes up, like that. Or if he dies in the day before the sun goes down. So everybody is going, like going to see it and everything else. And so the news was spreading, you know, some guy called, goes, tells his brother in that village and the cousins, so the whole county, you want to go and see it? Yeah, I want to go see it, yeah. So he went to where the burning area was, by the side of the river. And light starting to come, you know, some light you can begin to see. And people are just coming. They're coming on horses. They're coming every way they can get there because this guy was like, you know, wonderful guy. And he got there and he said he saw the body and it was lying on a funeral pyre, maybe about like, you know, this high with all this cow dung and wood and stuff like that, you know. And it very decorated in royal dress like that. And everybody was crying and, you know, saying prayers and chanting like that. It was intense, you know, spiritual atmosphere. And the priests were going through the rituals like that. Om Hrim Sham Om Ta Vishnu Param Param Sarata Shanti Swam Indraya Namaha. All these rituals and the demigods and everything else. It was intense, you know. And then everybody starts going, running. He said, well, what is it? You know, he looked over. There's one lady coming, totally tall, aristocratic lady, totally covered in white, her face, everything. And she had two maid servants with her, helping her, and about maybe 12 soldiers, you know, walking before and after, and some minister. And he said, oh, it's the countess, like that. You know, she's coming. You know, so he saw this. So she went right up to the funeral pyre. She paid her obeisances. She's crying. She bowed down. She's just, you know, in suffering, you know. So finally, she went right up on top of the funeral pyre, took his feet on her head, and then she motioned to the priest to give her the torch, like that. So this guy is like shaking. He didn't want to do it. And she's the Rani, you know, like that. So the guy hands it to her. So she took it. She started the fire, like that. And everyone's going, ah! Screaming and everybody else, and, you know, some people restraining their wives and everybody else, you know. And so finally, she starts chanting, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram, Ram is God, you know. And the fire is getting bigger and bigger, Jai Shri Ram, like that. So he's watching, and he was also wondering if he should jump up and pull her off, or, you know, other ladies were going to throw themselves in the fire as well. It was intense, you know, but she heard her voice. You could hear it like, you see, never forget it, you know. And the fire started going up, and she was engulfed in flames, and the voice got more intense. This is a test of your japa, right? Every morning we're chanting, okay, this is the test, you know. And so finally it was just, you never forget it, so intense, you know. And her voice just kind of cracked, and that was it, like that, you know. So we can't do that. I'm not recommending this. We do not. It's illegal in the first place, you know. But other than that, I'm sorry, you know. I'm sorry, your wife won't follow you. Christy will keep your picture like that. Yeah. She'll get a good picture frame like that. Yeah. But, okay, what happens? Good family, high-class family. You're born in that family. You're big, you're strong, you have the karma. It's just you. Destiny. You know? And then before she reaches puberty, maybe 10 years old, she's married to this guy. Okay, you're married 10 years old. You got your teddy bears, and you got a picture of, you know, a picture of Nick there. You put a picture of Nick right on your altar with your teddy bears, and, you know, before you go to sleep, you put a teddy, and, you know, there you go. Yeah. So it's very, very natural, you know. And it probably describes this for himself. And he said he was married when he was like, I think he was like, you know, 18, and his wife was like maybe 12 or something like that, you know. And the same thing, both the families were arranged in. Both families will fit together, get along very well. Our children will get along very well. Okay, you know. And so they were married, you know, but she never showed her face to him. Forget it, you know, it was just like that. Then after some time, it was the first time she cooked for him, like that. You know, cook for your husband the first time, so her mother helped her cook something, you know. Both families came together, different rituals, and then finally she came over, fully covered still, and put the plate in front of her husband for the first time, you know. And Prabhupada says at that time he grabbed her hand like that, you know, like that, teasing her. And so she started crying, and she's like, you know, like 12 years old or something like that. Mommy! Like that. But she's totally nervous, you know. And then Prabhupada says the mother chastised her, said, now let her go, don't do that, don't be naughty now like that, you know. So she ran back next to her mother and sat down. But you could tell she was this tickled pink, you know. See? My husband likes me like that. You know? He caught me like, well, let me go, you know. So you can tell it was very sweet like that, you know. You know, he was playing. And then went on like that, different ceremonies, okay. And then, you know, finally the final ceremony, then they walk around the fire 7 times. And then finally for the first time, and they take hands, you know. I don't know, is this true? No Indian girl will give her hand to a boy until she's married. Huh? Oh, okay, anymore. But before it was, just forget it. You know, it's like that. I mean, even probably, I would say probably most Indian girls still, you know, just like forget it, you know, because at that time there's a psychic exchange. You hold the hand, husband gets half the bodies go both ways. That is karma. You get the karma. Take the hand, you got the karma, like that, you know. Okay, so you're holding hands for the first time. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. You know. Well, that's not bad. Then you walk around the fire 7 times, right? And then for the first time, the husband pulls the girl's veil up, you know, and looks at her face. He looks at her face. And Prabhupada says, that time there's this intense psychic exchange, you know. She's so pure, you know, she's never held hands, never man in her life, everything else. Never talked to another guy alone like that, you know. And he's God. He's been to the big city. He's been to San Francisco. You know, he's 24. She's 16, like that. And the age difference is such that it's very natural just to, you know, idolize like that. And it's very natural to feel protective like that. You know? Now we're talking about a real marriage, you know, a real first-class culture. And you go through everything in life together, you know, raising your children. You know, your child's about to die from a fever. You know, so all night long you stay up taking turns holding in your arms. And it covers like that. Yeah, we did it, you know. On and on. It's just so many things together. Vaisheshika was describing, nobody could finish the Jamashtami outfit on time, Krishna's birthday, and so his wife agreed to do it. She had to sew, like she had to sew continuously almost for 3 days like that. So he read the Krishna book to her the whole time like that, we're doing it. He said when they were standing together and the curtains opened like that on Jamashtami, they were standing together, it was like this, you know, this feeling like that. Husband and wife, you know. Yeah. So it goes on like that. So finally you can understand that when he dies and leaves her, you know, it's being burned to death alive is less painful, you know, than being separated, literally. Okay, we're not in favor of suicide, but if you're suffering that much, okay, you know, we're going to let you do it. So that's the thing Arjuna is facing, right? His heart. Now you maybe understand the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, right? He's facing, probably says, you can't understand his situation. For you, the biggest catastrophe is if your computer won't boot up. Like that. It's like, my games are lost. My chat, I can't chat today. I can't watch movies. Like that. Yeah. When I was a child, it was television. Every night, television. Our television didn't work for 3 days, and it was just like this, literally a shock. We have to face each other. We gotta look at our other people in the family. Like, what do we do? You know. Where you can go outside and play. Outside? Play? Evening? Like that. Oh, my God. You know, I was. But it's nowadays, we have an integrated thing, but you get separated from technology, and you feel this, like, you know, terror, you know. People nowadays, young people, they don't know how to exchange conversations using facial expressions and posture. It actually studies like that. They can't, like, you know, like, hey, how's it going? Okay, how's it going? They really lost a lot of this ability to communicate with body language, you know? Because they're always like, you know, I'll text message you like that. You know? Literally, it's like, oh, I'll talk to you in a couple minutes. So I'll text message you from lunch like that. You know? Okay. You know? So they're so used to like telephone or internet or text messaging, they're really losing this ability to communicate, you know, by body language and stuff like that. Yeah, so on. And you know, people can say, the adults can say, oh, he's thinking that. How'd you know? They can tell by the way he's sitting like that. Oh, really? I guess you're right. Yeah, yeah. So it's Bhagavad Gita is an extremely emotional book, right? If you really, there's so much logic in here, so much analytical discussion, but if you really want to get down to it to understand why Krishna says that, why Arjuna says that, going back and forth to solve this problem, you know? Because in the end, he doesn't want to fight. I don't want to fight with my family members. But look, what he did to your family. You know, Draupadi's honor, you know. You know, yeah, I should fight. Really, according to the laws of Dharma, there's nothing I should do, but I have to fight. You know, I have to regain her honor. You can't treat a woman like this, you know, like that. You know, I have to do it. But, and my family, right? And this is the biggest problem anybody faces in the end, is having to deal with the people you love, you know, in these different relationships like that. Everything else is secondary at that. Heat and cold, honor and distress. No, family and friends and community like that. If somebody loses his job, He has to change his residence, leave his neighborhood, and somebody very close to him is gone. Watch him. Prime candidate for suicide. Prime candidate. Those three things. Losing somebody close to you, losing your job, and having to move to a different neighborhood like that. It's just many, many times it's just too much. It's, you know, like that. Yeah? So, okay. You know, now we know. This is going to happen. So, yeah. And also, too, the reaction for suicide is not so bad because it was too much pressure. But if you commit suicide just to hurt somebody, okay, yeah, you're not getting away. Yeah. You're going someplace else where you're going to suffer for what you did, you know, by hurting somebody. Right? Yeah. So, beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Right? And then Krishna goes through so many things and different alternatives, and kind of like Arjuna realizes he can't solve this himself. His knowledge of Dharma Shastras and everything else, he's a warrior. He knows it pretty good because he's got to apply this stuff, you know. But he says, I just can't find a solution to this problem like that. You know? So in the end, then Krishna, he surrenders to Krishna. Look, you're the father of all Dharma, so please, you know, I'm giving up. I'm not going to give my opinion anymore. I know I'm trying to adjust it so I can enjoy the revenge, but I give that up. Now you just tell me what's right. Like that. What should I do? Then Krishna says, you should do this. And he says, but wait a second, what about this and that? Okay. Honest doubt. Not cheating anymore. He says, yeah, okay, I see what you mean. I see your problem. Okay. Then he goes to this. He says, well, what about that? That. You know, okay, I see this. And he says, what about this? And Krishna sees he's kind of cheating there. And he goes, chastises him a little bit. You know, well, yeah. Or he sees he's becoming just discouraged. He can't handle it. So he encourages him. So finally he goes through all this in a very emotional fashion, because the conclusion is, okay, I'll make it bound to earth here. After this class, tonight you have to go home and kill your wife, your mother, your father, your cousins, and all your brothers like that. Any questions? Yeah, I put it that way, I got a few questions. Yeah, that's what he has to do. At the end of this class, he has to murder, you know, kill, you know, almost most of his entire family, or else put his own family into a position where their lives are being risked like that. What for? So his brother can sit on the big chair like that, the big throne. You know? That's what he's saying. I'm not going to get on that. So that's the beginning. That's the first chapter. Books are available in the lobby for the mere price of not $25, not $15. Today, only $10. And Ananta Roop Prabhu will autograph him today also too, like that. Huh? Okay, well, pass them around like that. Autograph copies like that. Yeah. Okay. So, okay, any questions? That's the situation. That's why it's... Because it deals with things that touch our heart like that, you know? Like that. Yeah? Yeah?
My dad had a question yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Some things. So I think it's like a newer rituals.
Yeah.
In theory.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to tell.
No, again, it's in the age of even the Treta Yuga, the last age, there was so much result from sound. Om Hrim Sham Gram Om Ta Vishnu Paramam Param Sarapashanti Surayo Vivachak Suratam Tarvasapanyava. It's like, yeah, what I can do right now. Yeah, so everybody, yeah, so even now, sound has an effect. So if the atmosphere is more subtle, these brahmanas chanting together, even you go to Peru in the mountain, in the Andes, these guys playing these flutes all together, being the drums, and chant the same rhythms over and over again. Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy. It allows you to start seeing things in a different way. Like that. The past and the future disappear, because it's like that. And you get into the present moment, which lasts about 3 to 7 seconds, depending on how sophisticated your culture is. And the whole world's here right now. Okay, back into time, like that. Yeah, it's a whole different, they still have these cultures, they still do these things. So we don't do those things, right? You don't do that. No, you don't get out of time and space when you're doing the thing like that. No, leave time and space. But you can feel it when it's going on, it has some potency like that. You know? So yeah, because of the quality of the priestcraft and stuff like that, you know, and different things are happening and different elements are no longer available, you have to substitute. And even like in the Bible, the rituals there, they're describing the priesthood and stuff like that, even, you know, just a few thousand years ago, which doesn't exist. Yeah. And so, yeah, and Parasara says, if it's for Kali Yuga, he says, you know, six brahmanas get together, they can make up a practical expiation, everything else like that, and so on, based upon scriptural advice. So we're making adjustments, but we're not making unnecessary adjustments, and they're within the range of the adjustable things like that, you know. Like that, you go arm broken, the medic may have this thing he puts on your arm like that, you know, just touch the straps and Velcro. But if you haven't got that, what do? You just grab a, you know, thick newspaper, and, you know, fold it and rip your half of your sari off and tie it around. Okay. Oh, it's not, sorry, that won't work. Got a splint. It works just as good. You know, like that. So we're making adjustments within the scriptures for the current time and place. So you're married. You're married. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Things like that, so he's wanting to be like ancient and preserved the rituals for
what is it? What does it say right here? You can read it.
The Institutes of Prasada.
Yeah, so the copy we have is over 110 years old. This is what you have here is a 112-year-old book, like that, right? And then this is referring to other texts, like that. And then you have here the actual professors, you know, with their body of literature being passed down by so many different people, like that, you know? You're saying that these libraries discovering, St. Louis discovering, the copy was lost, you know, our library in Berkeley. But then somebody else discovered, you know, it's the same thing, yeah. We discussed it with the professor, yeah, he did this and that. Oh, that's why it's this way, because it wasn't the original Sanskrit. This was taken from the Sanskrit. The Sanskrit was published, going to be published. He says, I got a manuscript, I translated it, that's where I got it from. The Sanskrit's going to be published in about a year or two by the Asiatic Society also. Never was. What happened? We talked to Vandapajaya from the Asiatic Society. He's saying, no, it was published in Bombay about 3 years later. Maybe the same one or something like that. So like that, that's what you do. You investigate. Yeah? And pretty soon you begin to, the fruit isn't the final thing. Like that. You know, we're saying in the end you're going to see God. You're going to realize your relationship with Him. Like that. You know. Oh, my friend was walking in the forest near his house. Saw a she-wolf. It's in California. No, a cougaress. Mountain lion. Ron Lucille. He looked at her. She looked at him. And you kind of went like this. What you got to do slowly. You go like this slowly, like that. Put a hard look on your face, and you see a mountain lion. Make yourself look bigger than that. Okay. Now you know. The classes are very useful. Not too fast though, because it makes you look bigger and stuff. And you kind of walk around slowly. You stop and look back, like that. And you walk a little more and stop and look back. You know, because don't start running. Yeah. And so, and she starts walking behind him, you know, and every now and then he stops and kind of looks and kind of, you know, like that. And you show, you know, I'm cool, I'm tough, you know. And finally he walked back to his house, and there's a dog. The dog is half wolf, half husky, what's it called? German Shepherd, like that. So he goes up a little bit on the hill, and he kind of wakes the dog up, and the dog goes, he looks around like that. And he said, the dog, he could not believe it. The dog is normally this thick. The dog was suddenly this thick. It's like, he didn't have, hey, there's a mountain lion there. Like that. He didn't have no explanation necessary. The dog was going like, like that. Then you could tell the dog was just right at this balance, you know? It's like attack, or just put your tail to your legs and run like mad. The dog was just, it was adrenaline, you know? It was like, push the red button like that. You know, pull the thing up and push this button. And so, but then he grabbed the dog's collar so the dog couldn't run. And then he was like, and then the mountain lion kind of looks like two against one, you know, and all right, okay. And she went away like that, you know, so on. Yeah. Yeah. So are we getting this topic about rituals or, yeah. How old is the ritual? How authentic are they? Oh, American Indians, is that what we were?
No, because then you start talking about the covenant.
Yeah, yeah, I forgot.
Huh?
I forgot. Okay. Anyway, it's a good story. Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, actually, today what we did then, Neos, Pandava Vijaya and myself, we went there. First, we photocopied every page at 111%, and we pasted them up, and we discovered that some of the pages were out of order, and we repasted them. And then we went ahead and made the photocopy of those, and we produced, where is it here? Photomasters, right? Then we put it in the robot, and finally, there it is, the Institutes of Parasara, 112%, like that. Yeah, so on. Yeah. So we'll make them available, like that. Yeah. Because it's practical. Copyrights, forget it, man. There's no copyright on a 112-year-old book. Like that. Die. Okay. So, Papa Ki, die.